With the government partially shut down and America's ability to borrow running out, at least one shred of economic certainty, the White House has now picked its nominee for Federal Reserve boss.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. This afternoon, President Obama will nominate Janet Yellen to be the next Federal Reserve chair. If confirmed, she'd be the first woman to hold that position. But with the Fed policy under scrutiny and Washington locked in a budget battle, her Senate confirmation process could get especially interesting. So who is Janet Yellen and what lies ahead at the Fed? Marketplace's Sabree Benishore reports.
As Fed chairs go, Janet Yellen is pretty well prepared. She's been at the Fed on and off for the past 20 years.
She's got just a wealth of experience. She's seen some years that seemed quite prosperous. She's been through the financial crisis, and she's been through the aftermath.
James Wilcox teaches finance at UC Berkeley, where Yellen was his colleague. He says her biggest challenge will be to stimulate the economy to create more jobs.
The recovery has been underway for several years now, but we still have a lot of slack.
At 67, Yellen inherits a Fed that's been trying unconventional ways to remove that slack. She strongly supported Ben Bernanke's policy of pumping trillions of dollars into the economy to promote lending and keep interest rates low. But she'll have the delicate task of turning off the tap and pulling that money back out. Alan Blinder is a former Fed vice chair himself.
A big part of the Fed's exit strategy is how and when to judge that it's time to start withdrawing this liquidity from the banking system.
Pulling back too fast could send interest rates higher and snuff out job growth. Moving too slow could trigger inflation. Critics worry Yellen might err on the side of employment. Kevin Hassett, now at the American Enterprise Institute, was at the Fed when Yellen was a governor there in the early 90s.
There are folks who have a genuine concern that unless you have a real inflation hawk at the Fed, that inflation could spin out of control, as it did, say, in the 70s.
Supporters say she'll act according to her reading of the economy.
Janet is enormously pragmatic. She's not ideological.
Joe Stiglitz is a Nobel Prize-winning economist who taught Yellen at Yale.
She will look at the situation as it exists. Right now, the situation is that we don't face any inflation problems, and the situation is that we face a serious unemployment problem.
The Fed also has to prevent another banking problem. It has new powers to oversee the financial system, and it's an open question how tough Yellen will be in wielding them. Unlike Larry Summers, she's never worked for a Wall Street bank and doesn't have his close ties to the White House. In the end, she could prove more independent as a Fed chair. In New York, I'm Sabree Benishore for Marketplace.
Janet Yellen has always been on everyone's short list, and that was true before former Treasury Secretary Lawrence Summers dropped out of contention. For more, let's check with Gus Fauché, senior economist at PNC Financial Services Group. Gus, good morning.
Good morning.
So if Janet Yellen is confirmed, is this an inflection point for economic policy?
I don't think so. Dr. Yellen would continue the policies that we had under Chairman Bernanke. She's been vice chairman of the Fed. She was president of the San Francisco Fed before that. She's voiced support for Chairman Bernanke's policy. So I think we'd see a continuity in monetary policy. And I think from the market's perspective, that's good news.
Now, we've seen some higher share prices this morning since the nomination news hit. The dollar is stronger against the euro. Is that just noise or maybe a bit of the Yellen effect?
It could be a bit of a bounce in markets from the nomination of Dr. Yellen. That being said, I think what's going on with the government shutdown and even more so the potential breaching the debt limit is going to have a much greater effect on markets over the next week or so until we get those issues resolved. So it may be a temporary bounce, but I don't expect it to last.
Gus Fauché, PNC Financial Services Group. Thank you.
Thank you.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
Somebody made a killing on the financial meltdown. The Wall Street Journal did some calculations and figures. Billionaire Warren Buffett made $10 billion on the bold investments he made in troubled companies 5 years ago, a kind of private sector TARP bailout plan courtesy of his company, Berkshire Hathaway. Here to consider this achievement is Marketplace regular Alan Sloan, senior editor-at-large at Fortune Magazine. Hello, Alan.
Good morning, David.
So when everybody else was running for the exits during the great meltdown of 2008, early 2009, Mr. Buffett was in there actually investing in companies, lending to companies.
Well, as he says, everyone's heading for the exits, and that's where you head for your checkbook. And that's what he did, and it's worked out great.
Things like Bank of America gave money to Goldman Sachs. I mean, didn't just give the money to Goldman Sachs. He wanted a return, which is the point here. Also, Wrigley, the chewing gum people, part of M&M Mars. Many billions went in that direction.
Yeah, well, and General Electric and all of this stuff. And by the way, I owe him a thanks for Wrigley because I owned a lot of Wrigley stock.
So there is a personal finance lesson here that I think is plain for all to see, which is when people are panicking, maybe it's not such a terrible time to invest.
Maybe not, but you have to know what you're doing, which Buffett does, and you have to be willing to take a loss, which Buffett is willing to do because he's a grown-up.
And the Wall Street Journal calculates that Warren Buffett et al., his company, got a handsome return, 40% over 5 years. Not bad.
I think it was actually more because there are certain profits he has that they weren't counting in their calculations. I think it's probably 50 or 60%.
But beyond that, you're concerned about this story in a different way. It's the comparison that it invites. What did the government get back on its investments? One calculation is a paltry 12%.
It's apples and oranges, to use the cliche. The purpose of Warren Buffett is to make as much money as possible for Berkshire Hathaway shareholders, who, by the way, include me. And the purpose of the government's TARP program was to keep the financial system from collapsing. So the fact that the government came out ahead on TARP is, to me, something we should celebrate instead of comparing it to Warren Buffett, which would be like comparing me to LeBron James on a basketball court.
Alan Sloan, Senior Editor-at-Large, Fortune Magazine, thank you.
Glad to be here, David.
And the artist and cyclist David Byrne believes economic inequality is ruining the creative spirit of New York City, his adopted hometown. The former frontman for the Talking Heads and Oscar and Grammy-winning composer rues the passing of cheap rents in cold water lofts and the excitement that brought. Writing in Creative Time Reports, Byrne says parts of Brooklyn are virtual walled communities, pleasure domes for the rich, he calls them, leaving no room for fresh creative types. Bit by bit, he writes, the resources that keep the city vibrant are being eliminated. David Byrne also said,
"You may find yourself in a beautiful house with a beautiful wife, and you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?"
Which is not the first time the news media ran a soundbite from a talking head. More on David Byrne and inequality at marketplace.org. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.